This is the DTV Digest, the podcast that brings you news and reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema. And now, here's your host, Mike Parkin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the DTV Digest. I'm your host, Mike Parkin, and joining me this episode is Richard Hawes.
Hello, everyone.
This week, we've got four main reviews to look at. We're going to kick off with Jericho Ridge, followed by The Bad Shepherd, Prey, and Land of Bad. Our short shot is Alberto and the Beast, and we're going to wind up with our DTV throwback, Pulse. So, without further ado, let's crack on. Our first film, then, is Jericho Ridge. Trapped and without backup, a small-town cop fights for her life when her remote sheriff's office is targeted by murderous attackers. This is a film I started getting notice of last year when friends in the States were putting it on their best action films of 2023 lists.
Okay. Yeah.
And it was a film I'd never ever heard of, really. It just had zero fanfare at all, apart from, you know, this sort of word of mouth. And I must admit, I thought this was brilliant. So it's one of those, you know, it's quite a small story. We have a protagonist who's this, you know, she was the sheriff, but she had to step down because of sort of personal reasons. And she's still sort of well respected by you know, her peers. But there's, you know, this weird thing going on that the station's been broken into and all their handguns have been stolen. And they think they know who did it. So, you know, some of the officers go to investigate. And then weird stuff starts to happen and things escalate. I think it sort of sets itself up really, really well. You know, the way it limits what the sheriff, you know, our sort of protagonist can do. She's got a broken foot, for example. You know, there's hardly any guns in the precinct, and you know, she's having to sort of think on her feet and try and figure out what the hell's going on. I thought this worked really, really well. How did you find Jericho Ridge?
Yeah, I thought it was really good. Very shades of Assault on Precinct 13 and Rio Bravo before that. Made by writer-director Will Gilby, who this is his feature debut as a director, but he has done a lot of other work as both a writer and even more so as an editor, including films such as A Lonely Place to Die, which was made by Julian Gilby, which I presume to be a sibling. But yeah, so he made some films before. There was one called Father's Day, which I watched, which was pretty interesting. And this is a great debut. I mean, looks fantastic, the cinematography and the editing. And I would say especially the sound design I thought was really good. And the music especially really jumped out at me. I thought it's a very taut thriller. It's over in just over 80 minutes. There's, you know, it follows a lot of conventions and stuff. There's things that you kind of expect to happen that do, but there's some nice twists along the way. There's some interesting characters that are introduced, like, as in the whole Rio Bravo kind of thing. There's someone they've taken captive who, you know, is in the cells, and you know, there's some interesting stuff they do with that supporting character. Film is, it's a British film set in America, but actually filmed in Kosovo, or at least partially filmed in Kosovo. The whole police station, you know, the cabin style police station setting in the mountains, that's all Kosovo, which I thought was great. You know, very convincing, I thought. I mean, we've seen various European locations doubling for parts of the United States in the past, and I thought this was a really good example of how that can work. So yeah, I didn't know until actually checking after what the score was. But there's a fantastic, I mean, it all hinges on, you've got some great character development and stuff introduced, but there's a tremendous, initial assault sequence that just comes out of nowhere. And, they do this thing with the bullets where you've got like tracer lines on the bullets, which I thought sometimes I've not liked that technique. I mean, especially they did it in the first Transporter film and I just didn't like it at all. But here I thought it worked really, really well. I thought the visual effects on that were top notch. There's a couple of little sort of breadcrumb things sort of seeded as the story's going along, because you're trying to work out why it's actually happening. And I thought so, I there were certain elements introduced that I thought was going to be, oh, that's the reason why it's happening. And it wasn't that. It was something else. So it didn't go down the avenues that I was expecting, which I enjoyed. There's a little bit of heart-to-heart drama stuff at times, and character development. It's great. It's a great little package. I mean, it's a cast of people I'd say I'm familiar with. I mean, to me, it was a cast of unknowns. But if I looked up in the credits, I can see that, like, for example, the lead actress, Nika Amuka Bird, she's been in two of M. Night Shyamalan's films, Old and Knock at the Cabin. But I confess, I did not recognize her, and I thought she was great, and I thought the supporting characters were all really, convincing, especially like the prisoner. Guy who ends up playing sort of a pivotal role at one point in the story. I thought he was great. Nasty character and stuff, really sort of playing with doing really good stuff there. And there's a nice little payoff with what happens to him. They're literally, yeah, there's some really cool stuff in here. There literally is a Chekhov's gun in the film. So I thought it was really good.
I really like that bit with the gun because, she doesn't trust anything, so she doesn't just assume, oh, for example, she's got a handgun and she the only bullets she can find are for a different gun. And she's like, well, what would happen if I use this ammo? And they go, well, you get up a couple of shots, but then the likelihood is it's going to blow up in your face, kind of thing, So it's I like the fact that she's savvy enough to know, okay, this, these elements are chalk and cheese, then that don't necessarily go together. The whole mystery as to why things are happening, I like the fact that it doesn't ignore that fact. There is a reason for stuff happening, and it eventually it takes a time to sort of play out and sort of put everything together, which I thought was very good. I just thoroughly love this. It's not massive. No car chases or anything. Most of the action is centered around the police station, but it is solid action for sure. It
How
works
did
really
you
well.
feel about the incorporate? Because, like you say, it is mostly set in this one place, but they use dash cam footage for
Again,
a kind of remote view on certain events that are happening
I thought that
at a
worked
couple
really
of
well as
points in the
well.
film. How did you feel? Yeah, I thought it was good.
It's some of the best use of that sort of thing I've seen for a while, that's for sure. No, this just works really, really well. A very good sort of self-contained story. How are you going to score it?
I am going to give it an 8 out of 10. I've got another note to just mention, but I'll save that until after you've given your score.
Yeah, I'm also giving it an 8. I wouldn't be surprised if this turns up in my top 10 at the end of the year. I suppose there are similarities between this and Cop Shop, but this is a
Yeah,
much
I've
more.
heard about that. Yeah, I
Yeah,
haven't seen Cop Shop, but
Cop
yeah.
Shop is very good, but it is a much bigger film than this. So much more gory and sort of more pyrotechnics and that sort of thing. It is a very good film though, and Gerard Butler's very good in that. But yeah. You were going to mention something else?
Yes, so this interestingly was mooted to have a cinema release, but prior to having its digital release. But I cannot find any reference here in the UK. I cannot find any reference to it actually playing in a cinema. So I thought that was quite interesting. It's not even certified. If you check the BBFC, it doesn't even mention a cinema release on there. So I'm not sure whether the cinema release had a late cancellation or it's flown so. I mean, the BFI don't even have it listed as being released as coming out as we're talking. It's supposed to be out in select cinemas at the moment, but literally no chance, which is a real shame because this film would look
It
fantastic
would.
on the big
Yeah,
screen.
absolutely. Yeah.
In America, it's premiered on BET. It's a BET original.
All right.
So anybody, any listeners in the States will be able to find it there. And I think it's available, on, VOD for us here in the UK.
Yep. So put the word out. This is a very solid action movie, definitely worth checking out. 2 8s from us. That is Jericho Ridge. Go check it out. Our next film is The Bad Shepherd. A group of friends on a hunting trip accidentally run over a young woman carrying a bag of money. Their loyalty is put to the test when a strange man comes knocking. A premise we've come across before, Rich, on numerous occasions. You know, the blue collar sort of group of friends come across a ridiculous amount of money, and then their friendship implodes, and at the same time, the people who want that really want that money start coming looking for it. It's films like A Simple Plan come to mind, among others.
Blood and Money with Tom Berenger came to mind for
That's
me.
another one. Even No Country for Old Men, that's another sort of similar scenario. Except here we've got these four friends on a hunting trip, and everything that happens in the film they deserve, basically. There is nothing in this that isn't just pure karma for these people, as far as I'm concerned. The film looks decent. Everything that sort of happens, it's set during the winter time. These guys are out hunting. But they're very, very quick. As soon as they see the money, they're very, very quick to sort of like thinking about, well, let's ditch the body, let's do this, all these sort of things. And then we get this guy called Sydney turn up, and he's a very sort of interesting character in himself, the way he presents himself, the way he talks to them. I thought he was probably the highlight of the film. As because most of this is a bunch of guys pointing guns at each other and yelling at each other about how much they need the money. What are your initial thoughts on this one, Rich?
Not particularly good. I mean, it's not that there's anything wrong with it per se. It's like you say, the production values are decent. It's a standard kind of cabin in the woods, crime story. Like you say, stuff like A Simple Plan is like the high water mark. And then you've got, a bunch of characters who find themselves in a situation that escalates very, very quickly. It seems to go from, I think the problem I had with the film is that this I kind of like the fact that it gets underway so quickly, but at the same time, I think that's at the cost of character development and sort of built in investing any real interest in the group of guys before things actually happen. The first time you meet the characters is when they find the money, which in other films would be about half an hour into the movie. The general rule is do all your setup. The big thing happens at half an hour. And because that film sidesteps that and tries to put the viewer in a more detached position, I think it's to the detriment of the film because you don't, you just sort of marvel. You just think, why is it going all of a sudden from, oh, we're just a bunch of guys on a trip to we like in literally in like 2 minutes
Oh yeah.
to like they've made the decision, they're going to do the thing and whatever. And I think you need a bit more build up than that. It's just it's so hasty. It's hasty, but it's not like it's a short film. It's still about an hour and a half long. Actually, there was no credits on the screener, so I presume it runs even longer than that, probably about an hour and 30, hour and 35 maybe. But the team was sort of, because there's no credits on it, I didn't actually know anybody's name, but I did look, I've looked up some information and I know that the guy playing the gangster style guy in the very smart suit with the expensive car,
He's the director of the movie,
All right. Gio
Gio Santini.
Santini. Yeah.
And yeah, go on.
Well, he reminded me of John Leguizamo, you know.
Oh yeah, I can see what you mean. Well, I was thinking of Violent Night with him actually. So yeah, that would make sense because John Leguizamo was the antagonist in that. So yeah, this guy comes along, and I was just thinking they've just made X decision in one situation, and then this guy comes on, and they make another decision which seems counter to it. When you think, well, if you've done X, why are you doing Y? Because he seems to be the bigger threat than some of the others. So that was sort of it was that whole rule, why is it happening? Well, reasons, the plot, the film needs it to happen, and they need to put him in that situation, whereas other characters are maybe a bit more disposable. So I wasn't massively invested. It's fine for what it is. I think the most intriguing thing is where the story ultimately goes, which
See,
obviously we don't want to spoil,
no.
but
If Steve was
I
watching
was quite
this,
amused by that.
I was, and I was just thinking, you know, I'm sure if Steve was with us, he would have had something to say about that, because it is one of his bugbears when a film suddenly switches genres, you know,
Well, he kind of it
out of nowhere.
indicated as much when we were talking off air
Right.
last week. He was like, "Have you guys seen it yet?" And he was like, "Right, okay." It was like he was indicating there's something we're gonna have to talk about on this. And unfortunately, say Steve hasn't been able to join us this week. But it was I thought that was the most fun aspect of it. I do think it's even though it's quite succinct, it still draws it out a bit. And I think some of the monologues and stuff I could have really done without. But I knew that I was feeling I got a feeling from quite early on that this character is X, and he didn't turn out to be exactly what I thought he was, but he wasn't far off.
Not far off at
So
all.
and then it's kind of an
It
interesting morality tale kind of story, I guess.
is. And I was watching it because, you know, even up to three quarters of the way in, I'm thinking, what does the title mean? You know, what is the relevance of the title? You kind of get an inkling of what the title means by the end of it. But I will give this film one credit. It made me laugh out loud for one brief moment. I don't think it meant to make me laugh out loud,
Right.
but there's a bit where one of the characters is recalling what had happened to him on a business trip, which the other guy, which Sydney seems to know about, and he ends it by saying it was an accident. And, you know, juxtaposing it was an accident with what you actually see happening. And I just laughed out loud. I thought, really, is that what you're telling yourself? Okay, mate, you know, whatever.
Well, I thought that was quite interesting that that was, the way they that was done really well. I thought they showing the because it could have been his recollection of what's happening, but what they're showing is
It's the reality of what
it's the
happened.
reality is what's happening compared to what he's saying is happening, and I like
Exactly.
that. Yeah, I thought that was all really well executed.
It was, but it made me laugh. Yeah. Okay. I agree with you on this one. It's just too much. You know, it comes out of nowhere. There's no build up to the characters, so you know what we learn about them is after the life changing moment. So there's no sort of juxtaposition as to how these guys interacted beforehand, you know, which would give you know, it sort of show you how their sort of their relationships dynamics have broken down. You know, they're just broken as they're sort of presented to us. I kind of like the, you know, the way it ended, although I think it was a bit heavy-handed in the flashbacks and the things, and the very last bit that you see was like, oh, okay, you know, that person was involved as well, which is interesting. So on that note, what are you going to score it, Rich?
I'm a little bit torn, but I think I'm gonna sit on a five for this. I was close to a six, but I just think I felt it was a little bit flatter in places and less engaging for me. So I think it's bordering a six, very close to a six, but I'm gonna sit on a five.
I am going to push it to a six, believe it or not. So I
No, that's fair.
even so, you know, I do feel it rushes into things and then it compounds that. Like, you know, they're still sort of deciding what to do with the money, and then the cop turns up, you know, and there's that scenario to deal with as well.
Well, that's what I think. I think it all that whole bit that is so rushed. You know, I think we could have really spent some time doing the build up, finding some situation. What are we going to do? You know, that the police officer
may turn
up a bit later in the film. You know, they just try and get it all going too quickly, which I guess was by design, because, say, things like this have done that before. They're kind of going, right, we're not going to play this out, all that stuff, drag it, you know, because that's what people are expecting. Let's move straight on to the next part where we think we can do some more interesting stuff. I don't think there is that much more interesting stuff that happens there. Mm. So the film, it falls a bit flat, starts to run a bit slow for me. But well made, you know, decent enough, and certainly passes the time.
Absolutely, and good use of a bear trap as well. Mm. Okay, so a 5 and a 6 for The Bad Shepherd. Go check it out. Our next film is Prey. A young couple is compelled to leave their Christian ministry station in the Kalahari Desert after being threatened with death by an extremist militant gang. However, after crashing their aircraft, they must battle man and beast for their lives. It's a slightly truncated sort of plot there. Seems to miss out the fact there's about another sort of half dozen characters involved with that plane trip. Again, this is one of those films which looks great, but kind of misses the mark a bit for me. And it's not the first film we've seen called Prey with lions.
I think there's about half a dozen.
There is about half a dozen, yeah, exactly. Ryan Felipe, good as always, as far as I'm concerned. And a decent turn from Emil Hirsch in this one as well. There are some sort of interesting little beastie moments along the way, and a sort of, you know, an extended moment when they're sort of attacked by these sort of militants. What did you make of this one, Rich?
I thought overall it's fine. Say a bit like the disaster film we covered last week, On Fire. This is quite a short, very modestly budgeted sort of survival thriller slash, you know, a little bit of disaster kind of element in there, because it's basically a plane crash movie and then they've got to kind of survive. So it's a survival movie in the desert. It's low budget, looks clean, you know, we've got, you know, decent people in the cast. We've got, Ryan Phillippe, Mina Suvari's in there for a bit. Emil Hirsch, who can be, you know, one of those guys who rubs you up the wrong way at times, but here I thought, you know, actually he was playing to some strengths. I think maybe some of the way the plot develops and sort of tries to take his character in a different direction was entertaining and interesting, and I liked it, but it didn't always ring true because it was kind of it felt a bit forced.
Especially at the end, you know.
There's not a lot of there's not a huge amount of lion action in the film. Just as a side note, it's called Prey, and in the UK at least, they've added an exclamation mark to try and differentiate it, which just makes me think of Airplane, and then things like a so. Because the title comes up and it's like, how are you supposed to read that? Pray! I think it's like a direction, like an instruction. It's very odd use of an exclamation mark. But the animals appear as sort of composited kind of CGI, which looks kind of okay. But, you know, I think the closest relation to this would be...
Endangered species?
Very good call, yes. That's in terms of... Yeah, the whole film is very, very similar to Endangered Species, which was, I think, a superior film.
Yeah, it is.
Made by,
was it MJ Bassett?
Yes, MJ Bassett did that film. Yeah, I thought that worked better. This, say, ploughs exactly the same sort of ground, but also the Idris Elba film Beast, which I think was a year or two ago. This one's directed by Mukunda Michael Deville, or Deville, I'm not sure exactly how you pronounce it, but he's a South African filmmaker, I believe, who was, because I think that's where they filmed this. The only film of his that I've seen before is Vehicle 19 with Paul Walker, which is a bit like Locke, I guess. It's one guy in a car kind of thriller. I don't think Locke was, I never saw Locke, but I think that was more of a drama. Mm. But Vehicle 19 was, I think, more of a thriller, if I recall correctly. That was quite a long time ago. But yeah, he's directed a few things. So this is solidly made. So the emphasis is, because of the budget limitations, it's on that character drama and stuff, which I think mostly works. There's some twists and turns which I thought were reasonable enough. Fair play to Ryan Phillippe letting a scorpion crawl over his face.
Oh, crumbs! Yeah, that bit certainly wasn't CGI. That was
so fair play to him for that one. I think that's the most memorable part of the film for me. I think some of the other films, about lions called Prey, are better. Was the Dick Maas film called Prey?
Yes, set in Amsterdam.
And then there was one in the sort of mid to late 2000s with Bridget Moynihan, also in South Africa. That wasn't too bad. That was about like a couple under siege in a car, if I recall correctly. But yeah, it's fine. If you're a fan of these particular actors, I think you're going to get what you want. If you're after a lot of lion, you know, assaults and, you know, attacks and stuff, you're not going to get so much there.
Yeah,
but
because the main event happens off screen, doesn't it?
It's much more of a, I'd put this much more in the sort of disaster movie survival kind of category. And if you have seen Endangered Species, then you know, if you haven't seen it, you're probably better off seeing Endangered Species, but you're not going to go far wrong with this. For, again, I think it's very short. It's probably only about 80 minutes long. If you like a disaster movie, lion movie, whatever, check it out. You know, it's not, you know, you're gonna have a reasonable time with it.
Absolutely. How are you going to score it?
I'm going to give this one a 6 out of 10.
Okay, I'll join you on a 6. 2 6s for Prey. Go check it out. Our next review is Land of Bad. A U.S. Army Special Forces unit is ambushed during a mission to retrieve an intelligent asset, and their only remaining hope lies with a remote Air Force drone operator assisting them through a brutal 48-hour battle for survival. This is pure DTV sort of dressed up to look like a, you know, a big budget action movie, basically. Some big names: Russell Crowe, is it Liam Hemsworth in this one?
Yes,
Liam, not Luke. And
Luke is there in a supporting role.
Yeah, and then Milo Ventimiglia from Heroes and a few other things. Pathology was the other film I remember him being in.
Yeah, good film that.
Yeah, so you know, this, it looks great, but if you were to sit down with anyone with any sort of tactical knowledge, they would pick this film apart in 2 seconds flat. Starting with their Halo jump from a helicopter, because you just wouldn't be able to do a Halo jump from a helicopter for a start. You wouldn't have a team of just 4 people going in country. And oh yeah, you wouldn't be sort of chatting insufferably all the way through your mission. Is the other point I want to make. But have, you know, once you've sort of dealt with that sort of shit, you go, yeah, actually this is a lot of fun. Some good action scenes, some good sort of special effects. It is enjoyable. What do you make of it, Rich?
So I'm going to preface this by saying that my initial reactions to the film were coloured by the fact that I mistook this as being a film from William Kaufman, featuring Johnny Strong.
And, you think of War Horse One.
probably possibly. But it's like I was, it was only like part way through the movie, because I was really being bugged when I was watching it. I was like, is that Johnny Strong or is that Milo Ventimiglia? Because they do look very similar.
They
do to me. And I think especially in this particular role, you know, it's got that, he's, you know, he's playing a very Johnny Strong sort of character.
Mm.
And I was just wow. to be fair, I was blown away. I thought, wow, this looks really impressive. This is a mile ahead, you know, other William Kaufman films that I've seen. I then realized that it was a William Eubank film. Mm. And he did the film Underwater, which I did really like, which was also very aesthetically, you know, looked great. Mm. And was...
I didn't like that one as much, but he did do a movie called The Signal a while back.
Oh, was that the one where the signal drives everyone crazy?
That's a different one. This is the one with Lawrence Fishburne.
Oh, is that the? It's like set in Antarctic or something.
No.
Tell me what it was then.
Okay, so it starts off with the colony. You're thinking of the colony. The signal starts off with this couple sort of. It starts off really badly, to be honest, because it's all sort of found footage to begin with. And they investigate this house and everything, and then something happens, and they're sort of like suddenly in this facility, you know, supposedly having been abducted, and then being debriefed and interrogated and stuff by these scientists. It is brilliant. I won't say anything more about it. If you get a chance to see it, do see it. It is absolutely superb. But anyway, okay. So he's got a good pedigree. His old. Will Eubank, for sure.
Yeah. Okay. So even that side aside, I still think it's, you know, taking that initial misconception of what I thought the film was. I think that it feels like it's a, as you say, it's a big movie. I think the fact that it's anchored by Liam Hemsworth kind of makes it feel like. It's a big movie, but it's not a big movie because it's Liam Hemsworth. Because it's like, it feels like the biggest movie Liam Hemsworth has ever led to me. Mm. And he kind of seems a little bit out of place. Like there should be a bigger name actor in that particular role, which I feel bad saying because that's to the detriment of Liam Hemsworth. But I do think it's Liam's extraction.
Yeah,
I think it's very it's him doing that kind of very action-based kind of story, but there's a good character development with him because he's kind of in a bit over his head and stuff, which works all really well, I thought. And is he gonna get his stripes as is he gonna rise to the occasion, all that sort of stuff. So it's a good hero action story. I thought it was really, really good. I know a film's good if it's making me go wow. And that really doesn't happen very often. And there's a big explosive sequence, I think, towards the start of the film that really, very similar to Jericho Ridge, actually, something that just suddenly happened. I was like, whoa! I was really impressed at several points. I thought the cinematography was great. All the explosions great. Russell Crowe in basically a sit-down role is actually in it a lot more than you might expect. I really liked him in this. He was great. He was very committed to the role. It's reminded me of, you know, when I really like Russell Crowe and stuff. And I was like, well, I should watch more of his things because he was very engaging. He is the guy in, because he's a drone operator captain and he's in the sort of offices in I think, Nevada. He's talking remotely to the team and ultimately to Liam Hemsworth. So there's kind of that diehard kind of thing where he's the one. On the ground, supporting him. And they developed quite a good back and forth relationship, which I thought was quite nice. All the characters, actually, there's the whole team that we were introduced to at the beginning. I really wanted to spend more time with that team. I did think they were great. And it does, you know, through events, it leads to Liam Hemsworth then sort of spending a lot of time on his own, as you might expect with something like this. Because it is it is, say, his movie, really. But there's a few twists and turns of things that are going to happen. Towards the end, we get a section of the film where there's a lot of big thing. There's a big drama, you know, happening. Russell Crowe is kind of been pushed out. His character Reaper has basically gone to the supermarket, and they just keep cutting to and fro. And I know this is a common thing to say. It's a character is divorced from the action.
Situation. Yeah.
Yeah, the character is divorced from the action, but we're going to keep showing him as an indicator that he's going to get back involved again at some point.
Yeah.
I thought that...
just in the nick of time!
Yeah, oh yeah. Well, that's one of my criticisms, that there is a lot of just in the nick of time stuff that does happen in this towards the end. But I thought the supermarket stuff, maybe they'd sort of over-egged that a bit. You know, it's like, really, those scenes didn't need to be that long. And I thought they were sort of cutting the tension a bit too much. I know they were kind of like, oh, there's a contrast between, you know, he's doing this mundane thing, but there's this really drop, you know, desire, you know, what there's a, you know, a switch between, it actually makes you think of, you know, what, you know, even situations that are happening right now, you know, we're having this nice conversation, but over in, you know, Ukraine or whatever, there's like serious stuff going down, you know, and he's worrying about what he's picking up in the supermarket.
It reminded me of the ending of The Hurt Locker, actually, when Jeremy Renner goes back stateside and he's like, wow, that's a lot of different kinds of cereal. You know, he's like, can't decide what cereal to buy because it's like just too much. Yeah.
Yeah. So the, I actually thought you were going to like it a lot more.
Oh, I do like it a lot. But I just acknowledge the fact that there are elements in this. It didn't help sort of you're talking to my dad about it because my dad's a bloody army nut anyway. A couple of things. One is, it's set in the Philippines, in the sort of northern part of the Philippine Islands. Yeah, I was watching this with my wife, who is Filipino, and she goes, that's not the bloody Philippines. And when I looked, it was filmed in New South Wales. The other sort of really hackneyed bit as well happens quite early on when their overhead drone, surveillance drone, gets a fault and has to disappear. And all of a sudden, oh no, there's movement ahead of us. Oh no, what could it be? Kind of thing. You know, it's one of those, it's just a cat kind of scenarios that you get in horror films, you know. So there's elements there which, you know, to do with the script, basically, I've got issues, but what was actually presented on screen, I thought, is all very good, very exciting.
I think what you were saying there about, you know, stuff happening in that way, that was kind of one of the things I was also thinking about Jericho Ridge, is that, you know, something's happening here, you know, something changes sort of just in time for the next thing to happen. You know, it's all very sort of, some of it's a bit convenient. It's like, we've just finished our heart-to-heart chat. Oh, and now there's somebody who's just come out of the middle of nowhere.
Exactly. Good job they waited until we finished our chat.
Wait until they finished the conversation. Yeah. There's elements of that in both these films, I think. Overall, I thought this was good. I thought Liam Hemsworth sort of rose to the occasion. I really quite liked him in this. I mean, he looks in better shape than I've ever seen him in any of his other films. He looks definitely more like a, I thought at times he looked like a young John Cena.
Yeah.
And he was carrying quite well.
Is it Liam or Luke who's taking over from Henry Cavill on The Witcher? I think it's Liam.
Oh, I think it's Liam. Yeah. Luke tends to have the sort of smaller, more supporting roles. He actually doesn't look... They don't look anything alike, so it's quite reasonable that they could be cast side by side, because I just didn't catch that at all, that it was him, because I think I've only seen him in one other thing, which was the the Maggie Q horror film set in Thailand or somewhere. I think he played the husband. I think that's the only other Luke Hemsworth thing I've actually seen. But it's, again, it's about American characters and it's set in the Philippines, but it's actually a largely Australian and New Zealand cast in the New South Wales. But I thought that all was fine. Russell Crowe, massive guy he is now. I mean, he's so big.
Well, he is in this. But funny enough, I mean, I watched The Pope's Exorcist recently.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's big in that as well.
He's big, but not as big. So
maybe he fluctuates a bit, but Unhinged, I really liked Unhinged. I thought he was great. Right. That was a very good very brisk sort of B-movie kind of thing that he just threw himself into, which I do like. He seems one of those, I mean, he's very intense, like Russell Crowe, when he's in the interviews and everything. But he seems to like films that are quite fun as well as those that are more intense. I mean, this is one of the more intense ones.
Mm.
But, you know, he's turned up in things like Man with the Iron Fist and stuff. He seems to like a bit of a hammy kind of role at times. And I think this one, he's skirting with the hamminess and that. And, you know, but he gets some big scenes and stuff, which I'm sure but, you know, Steven Seagal could be doing stuff like this. And this just highlights, you know, that how bad Steven Seagal is in his movies. He's just like, even though he's a big guy, he could be putting in a lot more effort. And, you know, Russell Crowe's running around and stuff.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I did really like it. It's actually one of my favorite films of the year, I think.
Oh, good stuff. And on that note, how are you going to score it?
I am going to give it an 8.
I'm going for a 7 because I do have tactical issues, as I said. But other than that, I thought it was very good. So a 7 and an 8 for Land of Bad. Go check it out. Our short shot this week is Alberto and the Beast. While working for a children's show, a wildlife researcher encounters Bigfoot in the woods, which is probably about half the story. what we get here. So you know, he recognizes something on that his microphones have recorded and goes out to sort of check it out and finds Bigfoot with his Bigfoot trapped in a bear trap. So he helps him out and then just kind of shadows him for a bit, for a big portion of the film. Meanwhile, we've got these three loser idiots camping and stuffing wild mushrooms in their faces, which was, I must admit, in and of itself was quite amusing, the first part. But I just didn't sort of see the way the two storylines were going to sort of gel together, to be honest.
Do you think they did gel together?
Not really.
Was the thing I was most interested to find out from you, was how you felt about that second storyline and what on earth it had to do with the main storyline.
Yeah, no, I didn't quite. Yeah, you know, it's sort of like it pushes things in a certain direction, doesn't it, at the end? But no. But I did like the whole thing when he's like, oh, yeah, I've been eating these mushrooms. And his girlfriend's like, they're poisonous, you idiot. And he's like, oh, that whole thing. It was very well done. Mm. But, they kind of outstayed their welcome a bit when they started following the, you know, the footsteps themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is still just being the most obnoxious person ever. I just didn't quite get there for me. But I you know, the actual Bigfoot, I thought it was done really well.
You like a Bigfoot.
I do like a Bigfoot. Yeah, I've watched quite a few Bigfoot movies over the years. But I thought, you know, the way they presented him and everything was really well done. Whether or not he really would just, you know, just let this guy just hang out is another thing, but. What more can you tell us about this one, Rich?
I don't know much about it. It's been out a little while. I think it came out sort of mid to late last year, 2023. Written and directed by Jean-Paul Lopez Ali, who has, done a few shorts. I can only see like one credit, basically, but I think he's worked as like a cameraman and stuff in the past.
Mm-hmm.
This appears to be his... first short, although he seems to have done an episode of a TV show. But I, apart from the fact that I thought the Bigfoot stuff was interesting and say what it, I thought the production values were really good. I thought it looked very solid. It did feel like it was telling a movie story, like it was a longer story, which I liked. So in that sense, even though it's only 17 minutes, it does feel like, you know, just a snippet of what could be, but it's quite an enigmatic film, I would say, especially when it comes to the end. I didn't feel like I needed all the stuff with the campers.
Mm.
I think that maybe I didn't really gravitate towards the humor of that situation and stuff. Although some of it was okay, but really I was more interested in Alberto and what was happening with him and, you know, the program that he's working on and, recording these sounds and stuff. But I would have rather seen that side of things fleshed out a little bit more, rather than the focus sort of shifting, because once he, Alberto doesn't say much, and the Bigfoot doesn't say much. So once they're out kind of together, they're not actually saying. So the majority of the focus on the dialogue and characterization is on these side characters.
Yeah.
Which then ends, you kind of end up sort of, you know, focusing more on them mentally, because that's, they're the ones having the big dialogue scenes and like having the comical exchanges and stuff. So I thought it was sort of pulling against itself in certain senses, but say that aside, I thought the say really, really beautifully made, you know, nice, you know, authentic, you know, for, you know, location,
yeah, shoots, yeah,
and stuff. And, you know, I like saying what characterization there was of the, of Alberto and his employer was good. And obviously the beast was pretty good. So yeah, I think it's definitely worth checking out. I'm not 100%. It's not like a film I'm like massively excited about, but I definitely think it's really interesting and worth seeing.
What did you feel about the, you know, the presenter of this kids show? I mean, that came across as really weird and very tricky. Yeah, it's almost like it's for a cult, you know.
Well, I did wonder if it was, you know, if it was like a, I got more of the sense that it was like a guy doing a YouTube channel kind of thing.
Yeah, could be.
Rather than actually it being like a proper kids TV show, which is what it's, I mean, it says children's show on the IMDb sort of synopsis and stuff. But I didn't, it didn't feel like it was a Chris Packham, you know, really wild show, or anything like that.
It seemed more like a tranquility thing, you know, sort of like, oh, we'll get your mind map, we're going to sort of, you know, go into your mind, man, and all this sort of stuff. It's all a bit trippy, which is maybe he'd been on the mushrooms, you know.
Maybe. I feel like it's probably something I need to watch again, because there were probably bits and clues and little, you know, tidbits that I was missing, because I was so much into like the idea of following the Alberto character that once I was in the company of these campers, I was a bit like, I was sighing, you know, I was like, this wasn't what I wanted when I kind of came into this film.
I wish the guy did die from eating the mushrooms. But there you go. Cool. All right. We do not score the shorts, but we do recommend you check them out. You will find a link to this in the footnotes below. Go check it out. Our DTV throwback this week is Pulse. A visiting son tries to warn his father and stepmother that they are being menaced by a living and intelligent pulse of electricity that moves from house to house and terrorizes the residents therein. This starts very well. The prologue is excellently done, where we have this couple waking up because of the noises from across the street. Very disturbing. You know, they can see silhouettes of people or someone sort of moving inside and crashing and all sorts going on. That all was brilliant. Very well done. And then for me, the film just nosedived as soon as it became obvious it was going to be a kid in peril film. My least favorite genre, basically.
I've picked another disappointment for you. I'm sorry.
Unfortunately, it is. I have very little interest in sort of little ragamuffins trying to convince adults of what's actually going on, or, you know, and adults sort of go, no, don't be silly with it. You're just acting up because of the divorce and all the rest of it. And, you know, there are some good scenes in this for sure. The whole final section, I really did think that it was going to end on a real downer note at one point. On 2 points, actually. There's something that happens in the house and then something that happens outside the house, where it could have easily gone horribly wrong for the sort of protagonist, sort of kind of, you know, literally by the fingernails at one point. So, you know, but how it's for me, it did struggle to try and sort of present this thing as a living, breathing thing that happens. It, I suppose, in a way, it's kind of like a precursor to the stuff that is in the Final Destination films, for example. You know, it is that sort of thing where you know, the technology is being used in a malevolent way, you know, but for what purpose, who really knows, you know. But it's yeah, there are some interesting elements, but you're kind of just looking at wiring and things, and so, but yeah, it does get a bit trippy at the end just when he's been scanned by that laser and stuff like that. But I don't know. I take it you'd seen this one before?
Yeah, it's one of my favorites from when I was a kid.
Oh,
So
fair
yeah,
enough.
I hadn't seen it for many years. It's I think it might have had a DVD or Blu-ray release, but it turned up on a YouTube channel. It's a Columbia TriStar film, and it turned up on a channel called Voyage, which I believe Sony must own, because basically everything on there is Sony content. The film. I say I've got a lot of affection for it. I was watching it, sort of going, "Oh yeah, this bit's coming up," or "I remember that bit," or whatever. I think it's great. I say it might just be nostalgia, but I do think watching it as an adult, I was, or you know, all these years later, I was very intrigued by the vagueness of the threat, the way it's presented. They don't explain what it is. It could be, I mean, because at the start, there's a lightning strike. And that kind of kicks things off, and you do wonder: was it like an extraterrestrial kind of thing? Is it, you know, is this like an alien thing? Because it doesn't make sense in any way that this would be, say, a real, you know, like an organism or something. It's just like a circumstantial thing. But there is an idea; it does seem to be sentient in some way. But I love the fact that they never have some. I mean, they have the crazy old man, you know, you're all gonna die kind of thing. Which he's great. I loved his stuff, and you know, he happens to know, you know, the guy who, basically Tony Todd in Final Destination, is what is his character, or Crazy Ralph in Friday the 13th movies and stuff. So he's kind of between those two. And the yeah, I loved the, I mean, I love the concept of, you know, machinery sort of turning against you and stuff, like, you know, whether it's Maximum Overdrive, for example, which was an alien kind of, not an alien, but it was like an atmospheric kind of alien threat, which was a few years earlier than this one. And then you've got other stuff like Ghost in the Machine, Rachel Dzulely's film, which was literally a serial killer who goes into machines and
Shocker.
stuff. Yeah, Shocker as well. And yeah, so all these things where, you know, innocuous things start to, you know,
Yeah, but
kill
as you
you.
say, those are relatively ex given some sort of exposition.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, so they're given character, whereas this isn't really, you know, I mean,
Yeah, you
it's
just don't know what that means. Say, apart from the crazy guy who sort of indicates, oh, it's listening, and you know, think, well, it's somehow talking, and things are listening to it, and things react to it, and whatever. But I loved all the close-ups of the, you know, the circuitry, and there's bits where, you know, it adjusts the circuitry in like a TV and stuff, where some visual effects are changing the components, and all that. I loved all that stuff. I thought, okay, it's a kid in peril movie, but I thought Joey Lawrence is really good in the lead. This I didn't, you know, at the time when I saw this, I didn't know he'd go on to be the Joey Lawrence we know now, who's making all the money planes and all that sort of stuff. After this, the next thing I saw him in was the Blossom TV set, when he became like a teen heartthrob. But you know, got him and his brother. Because it's funny, because like Land of Bad, we were talking about two brothers playing different characters. In this one, you've got Joey Lawrence playing opposite his brother Matthew, his younger brother, who's playing the little kid Stevie, which again, I didn't know at the time, so I only know now, sort of retrospectively. Cliff DeYoung is top billed. He's the dad. He was playing the dad in all these kind of movies around this time. I liked him. And Roxanne Hart as the mother. The focus on who is the main character kind of shifts. Because you spend some time with David, Joey Lawrence, but then there's a whole section where he's kind of not around, and the shift focus shifts to his stepmother Ellen, and then at the later part of the film, it shifts to his dad, and then it comes back to him again. which I didn't say I don't have massive issue with that. So I think the film is pretty much near perfect for me. But say I'd say that might just be nostalgia. I think it's a really interesting concept. I love the fact that they keep it quite vague and mysterious. It's technological, but it's also horror, so it's kind of crossing over some genres. And I mean, kid horror was kind of a big thing at the gate and stuff. I think we were talking about it recently, actually, for a different film. But you know, kids in horror movies was happening a lot in the 80s,
sure.
Probably as a result of all the Gremlins, probably, and stuff like that. But yeah, I'd definitely say if you've never seen it, and you like like horror films with a sort of a high concept kind of idea, you know, if you like Final Destination and stuff like that, I think you'd definitely enjoy it.
Yeah, if you don't have the same hang up as me as to having a kid protagonist, then you'd probably be fine with it. I mean, yeah, it does look good. You know, the production values were there, the special effects and everything all work very well. There were some, you know, very, very tense moments. Two things happened towards the end, which I thought were very good as well, and could have easily gone one way or the other, the way they were presented. So, yeah, we don't score them, but we do think you should check them out. And where can people find this one, Rich?
It's available on YouTube on the Voyage channel. We will include a link in the footnotes below.
And certainly will. And that is the end of this week's show. Thank you for listening. Some really good films this week. Two eights being, which is quite rare for us these days. So please go check them out. Don't forget to check us out on Facebook and Twitter at the DTV Digest. And on the Short Shots, we just published a new episode quite recently. Go check that out. Other than that, thank you for listening. Tune in next time.
Thank you for listening to the DTV Digest. Let us know your thoughts in the comments and tune in again next time.